Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, we have some major local and national news stories on our show, starting with controversy escalating in the Grossmont Union High School District over those mass firings of teachers, librarians, and other positions. The community is pushing back, with student walkouts, parent protests, and a crowd turning their backs on a new acting superintendent as the board continued to ignore community concerns, and two trustees were heard making disparaging remarks on a hot mic. In El Cajon, the city council majority voted blindly to support a federal immigration bill just introduced in Congress, even though the text has not even been written yet. The council majority also voted to adopt an anti-Semitism resolution and to ban vaping devices disguised as hoodies, pens, and other objects targeting kids. Supervisors are looking to update their unsafe camping ordinance to address the growing number of fires started at homeless camps. On Crime Beat, hear about a Lyft driver's frightening ordeal after being kidnapped by a passenger in Spring Valley. The County of San Diego is asking residents to report damage from recent storms on the county's Tell Us Now app. An autopsy has found that Gene Hackman's wife died of hantavirus, a rare but potentially fatal disease linked to exposure to rodents, and it's been found in 9 rodents locally so far this year in San Diego County. Find out what you should know about hantavirus on our show today. 2 federal judges have ruled that the Trump administration's mass firings of probationary federal employees was illegal, sweeping decisions that order the temporary rehiring of workers in 18 federal agencies, and we'll have the tales. Local Republican Congressman Daryl Issa has not held a town hall for the past 7 years, so now some constituents will be hosting an empty chair town hall on March 23rd in Escondido, where a panel of experts will field questions about Issa's positions on issues. As the federal government works to dismantle the U.S. Department of Education, education advocates held marches nationwide this past week calling for an increase in education funding, including at California's state capitol in Sacramento. El Cajon's downtown is getting a new vibe soon as part of a revitalization effort that could be led by the same organization that revitalized Little Italy. Santee's Chamber of Commerce will soon have new leadership. On Green Scene, hear about Urban Timber, a tree salvaging company that now has a new home in rural Campo and is seeking collaborations with artists and local businesses. From California News Service, we'll have a report on water use by agriculture, and from Public News Service, here's some national news stories, including the Trump administration asking the Supreme Court to end birthright citizenship, concerns over a Palestinian student arrested and facing possible deportation for leading protests at Columbia University, and how staffing cuts are impacting our public lands. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters. This is Miriam Raftery with an education report. Controversy over mass firings by the Grossmont Union High School District are intensifying. On Monday, March 10th, students staged walkouts on all campuses across the district to protest the firings of 64 people, including 23 teachers, all 9 librarians, plus a smattering of vice principals, school psychologists, program specialists, and support staff, as well as 1 principal. Parents and union members from the Grossmont Education Association picketed all 9 campuses, and a petition opposing the firings has been signed by over 3,500 people. Teachers, parents, and students held a rally outside the district's board meeting on March 11th at Grossmont High School's gymnasium, where 500 people packed the hall and every speaker criticized the board's actions. The board required tickets for admission and threatened to go behind closed doors if the crowd became rowdy. Superintendent Mike Fowler announced he is stepping down due to health reasons, a brain tumor. Sandra Wesso, the acting superintendent, praised Fowler for his leadership. She then claimed the layoffs were needed because the district was overstaffed and suggested students could be served by alternative programs. An angry crowd stood and turned their backs to Wesso and the board. In an internal memo obtained by East County Magazine, Wesso said the district fears potential state budget cuts and is projecting long-term structural deficits, a fact disputed by trustee Chris Veit. The district ended the year with a surplus and has reserves 3.5 times higher than mandated by state law. Fight has suggested tapping reserves, but the board majority maintains reserves should only be for emergencies, not personnel costs. The meeting was punctuated by audience shouts of shame on you and vote them out, directed toward the board majority. In public comments, Kristen Leprell, a Grossmont High School math teacher named California Teacher of the Year, criticized the board for making budget cut decisions without consulting teachers and others who work to provide students the best education possible. Union President James Messina from the GEA noted that business services did not request these cuts. He said the revenue projection for the 2024-25 school year was $222 million, and the district ended up getting over $380 million in revenues. He went on to warn that these unpopular cuts could open up the possibility of the board being sued for personal damages and liabilities with a decrease in school operations. At one point, the board recessed over shouting from the crowd. After the recess, trustee Chris Veit, who cast the only vote against the layoffs at the previous meeting, proposed that the board rescind the February 27th vote to implement the layoffs and cancel a costly chief of staff position created by the board over the objections of many in the district. But his motion and the crowd's concerns fell on deaf ears. Woods said the layoffs were not on the agenda, and he refused to allow Veit's motion. Veit fired back, "It is overwhelmingly clear that the students realize that these cuts are a danger to their education," adding, "Taxpayers give us the money to educate their kids." Veit then suggested the district would lose students to charter schools if it follows through with such widespread firings. Dr. Woods chided the audience for behaving like kindergarten students. The crowd grew increasingly impatient with board members, who in some cases appeared bored. One audience member shouted at Trustee Jim Kelly to get off your phone. Granite Hills High School sight learning specialist Gavin Preston criticized the board's transparency, stating that not responding to the emails, public comments of your constituents, and hiding behind closed sessions in emergency board meetings is a dereliction of your duties as elected and public officials. After Dr. Woods adjourned the meeting with no additional votes taken, the board majority left out the back door. State law requires that any employees at risk of being laid off be notified by March 15th, when pink slips were sent out. Final notices must go out by May 15th. Adding fuel to the fire, two trustees were caught on hot mics during the meeting making disparaging remarks that they thought nobody could hear. Trustee Robert Shield was heard suggesting that teacher librarians are overpaid because they don't do lesson plans or grade papers, Voice of San Diego reports. He also claimed that some supporters were afraid to speak at the meeting because they didn't want to get beat up. He called the protests opportunism and predicted protests would eventually fizzle out due to mission fatigue. During a recess, Trustee Jim Kelly was also caught on a hot mic calling the protesters the rudest crowd he'd ever seen and accusing the crowd of trying to bully and humiliate board members. The teachers' union, concerned parents, and students have said they will continue ramping up protests in hopes the board majority may roll back some or all of those firings before the May 15th deadline.
This is John Tidwell with a local government report from El Cajon. 4 members of El Cajon City Council have voted to send letters of support of a bill, H.R. 1680, to its author, Colorado Republican Gabe Evans, and a second letter asking Congressman Daryl Issa to co-sponsor the bill, even though the text of the measure has not yet been released. The only description on the congressional website states that the measure will amend the Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act of 1996 to expand the prohibition on state noncompliance with enforcement of the immigration laws and for other purposes. But according to the site, congress.gov, no text of the bill has yet been submitted to the legislative analyst. So we don't know how the bill would affect immigrant enforcement locally, nor what other purposes might be included. 2 members of the public spoke at the El Cajon City Council meeting on March 11th, both opposed to the action. Rebecca Brandstetter called the bill a pig in a poke, stating, "If we can't read and understand the text of the bill, we can't know what council is asking for in its letter to Daryl Issa." She asked that the measure be tabled until the text is available for residents and council members to review. Stephanie Cauchon also voiced opposition. She voiced her opinion that nationally we're close to a turning point as voters lose jobs, benefits, VA services, and more due to actions of the Trump administration. coming on the heels of El Cajon's recent 3-2 vote to support having police cooperate with federal immigration authorities to deport undocumented residents for serious crimes, Cauchon told council members that if they vote to support the immigration bill without even knowing what's in it, the tide is going to turn and the communities that are supporting you now will stop supporting you and be ready to support those that have integrity. Two members of the city council also voiced concerns over the lack of specifics of the bill. Councilman Gary Kendrick said, "I'm very reluctant to support something that there's no text on. It's a blank check." Kendrick pointed out that a letter the city just received from the U.S. Department of Justice confirms that the federal government will not indemnify El Cajon or its police officers if the state takes legal action against them for violating SB 54. That's California's law prohibiting local authorities from cooperating with federal immigration authorities, except for undocumented persons convicted of certain violent crimes. Councilmember Michelle Mitchell said that she watched a video by Congressman Evans, the federal bill's author, in which he talked about uncuffing the police and getting rid of all the illegal aliens, not just violent criminals. Mitchell stated, "I don't want to put my name on a letter going to a congressman who hasn't even written his bill yet." But Councilmember Steve Goebel argued this is a chance to help craft the text, noting that the city could pull its support in the future if it didn't like the final language. Goebel cited language in the draft letter from Mayor Bill Wells to Congressman Evans, which says that El Cajon's police chief suggests there may be over 200 dangerous criminals who are undocumented living in El Cajon, as well as 52 unaccompanied minors who cross the border and whom the city is not allowed to check up on due to SB 54. Kendrick suggested that the city should simply write a letter to state legislators asking for a carve-out from SB 54 to allow us to do welfare checks on these kids and make sure they are safe. Councilmember Phil Ortiz criticized the law, SB 54, for not allowing police to hand over undocumented immigrants accused or convicted of nonviolent, serious crimes such as arson, battery, and burglary. "It is not moral to give a free pass to all of these different crimes," he said. The council voted 3-2 to support the immigration bill, even though its text has not yet been written. Mayor Wells, Councilmember Ortiz, and Councilmember Goebel voted in support, while Councilmembers Mitchell and Kendrick opposed.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
El Cajon's City Council weighed a resolution to condemn anti-Semitism at its March 11th meeting. Mayor Bill Wells and Councilman Gary Kendrick introduced a resolution to adopt the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, or IHRA, definition of anti-Semitism as an education resource for police and other city departments. The agenda report notes a rise in anti-Semitism since the October 7, 2023 Hamas attack on Israel. Even before then, a 2022 FBI report found that though Jewish people comprised only 2% of the U.S. population, they were the victims of 60% of religious-based hate crimes. Mayor Wells recalled learning about the Holocaust as a child and believing such cruelty and blind bigotry would not happen again. But recently, anti-Semitism has become rampant on college campuses, in cities, and in countries around the world, according to the mayor. The mayor said, "I'm asking the city council today to help us write a resolution stating that anti-Semitism is wrong and should be condemned." Councilman Gary Kendrick, co-author of the resolution, told his mother's trauma living in Czechoslovakia in 1939 and seeing close friends who were Jewish, as well as her employer, hauled away by Nazis. They were never seen again. Kendrick stated, "We need to protect Jewish refugees from discrimination." He also proposed adding an amendment to the resolution to formally condemn all racism against any immigrant, refugee, or asylum seeker, then said, "This is supposed to be a city of love, not hate." 13 people spoke on the resolution, most voicing opposition, largely due to objections over the IHRA definition of antisemitism. Vicky Estrella noted that some international organizations have found that Israel's retaliatory actions in Gaza constitute genocide, such as bombings of schools and hospitals. "They have destroyed the whole country," she told the council. "We should be free to speak out against this kind of oppression, as we did against the Holocaust." She called the resolution a ploy to silence criticism against what Israel is doing. Doris Bitar, a Lebanese-Palestinian woman married to a Jewish man, wants protection for people on both sides of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. "Discrimination is up by 300% in Arab and Palestinian communities," she told the council. She also voiced concern about a Columbia University student whose green card was revoked by the Trump administration because he helped organize a pro-Palestinian protest, which the administration equates to supporting Hamas, a designated terror group. His lawyer denies any ties to Hamas. "He's in a Louisiana prison," Bitar noted. "What allowed that to happen? This definition." She wants any resolution to be meaningful to all groups and to be sure that it does not squash our First Amendment rights. Several speakers said they are members of Jewish Voices for Peace. They oppose the resolution, suggesting it conflates anti-Zionism or opposition to the Jewish state with anti-Semitism, meaning discrimination, violence, or dehumanizing action towards Jews. Summer Ishmael, with the Council of Islamic Relations, said, "America is all about free speech, but said in some U.S. states, such as Arkansas, it's now illegal to boycott Israel." She told the mayor, "I would like to work with you to come up with a better definition of anti-Semitism and also address anti-Muslim hatred." Liat spoke in favor of the resolution, but did not give her last name. However, she maintained that the resolution does not limit free speech. She noted that the IHRA definition has been adopted by 95% of all Jewish organizations, 37 countries, 33 U.S. states, and even the Global Imams Council. She said that Jewish Voices for Peace does not represent most American Jews, citing a study which found that 95% of American Jews consider Israel an essential part of their Jewish identity. During council discussion, council member Michelle Mitchell said adopting the IHRA definition of antisemitism would bring in a political agenda. She asked who the bill's sponsor, the American Antisemitism Task Force of San Diego, is, since an internet search found no reference to any so-named organization. Mitchell said she opposes antisemitism, but reached out to the Anti-Defamation League for more information. She proposed tabling the resolution until after the Anti-Defamation League issues a report in late April. She also objected to having the city council vote on adopting the IHRA's definition without being provided the 11 points in that definition. In addition, she called for council members to discuss the issue with members of the Jewish community, as well as with church groups and Muslim groups. Kendrick said he would be fine with tabling the motion to talk with people from all sides and to be sure that the anti-Semitism resolution would not impose limits on protected free speech. But Mayor Wells objected. He called Jewish Voices for Peace a hardcore Marxist group that is a danger to America, disputed Mitchell's contention that El Cajon has not had any anti-Semitic actions in recent years, noting that a Jewish doctor was shot and killed last year. However, law enforcement did not find that shooting by a disgruntled patient to be a hate crime based on religious beliefs. Councilman Phil Ortiz said of the IHRA definition, "I don't see anything in here that is going to stifle any kind of free speech." He said if the resolution passes and a city employee were to post criticism regarding deaths of children in Gaza on social media, the employee would not be fired. Councilman Steve Goebel voiced his views, stating, "I think you can be anti-Zionist and not anti-Semitic." He said he would support any group being harassed or murdered and would support the measure despite concerns that it could open Pandora's box. Mitchell said she would consider supporting the resolution if the IHRA definition was removed, but the mayor would not support this. The council voted 4-1 to direct the city manager to draft a revised version of the resolution, which is expected to be heard in 2 weeks. Councilmember Mitchell cast the lone vote against the resolution. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Henry Migala.
With an estimated 1 out of every 5 fires in San Diego County started in encampments where homeless individuals congregate, San Diego County Supervisor Joel Anderson asked supervisors to update the county's unsafe camping ordinance. It would apply to property that the county owns or leases and to specified areas such as parks, open space, and certain public works facilities. "Nobody has a right to burn my constituents' homes down, whether they intend to or not," says Anderson. Supervisors voted unanimously to have staff draft a revised ordinance to empower the county to do more than just cite repeat offenders. A final draft ordinance is expected to be presented to the board in about 2 months when a final vote will take place. At that time, supervisors will have options for changing the current ordinance. Those changes could include adding provisions related specifically to fire risk, adding protections in areas including open spaces and public works infrastructure, and requiring 24 hours notice be given to those living in homeless camps to give them time to move personal property. Another option is to leave the ordinance as it is, which does include enforcement to prohibit and abate illegal encampments, remove improperly stored property on public property, and protect vacant property such as the San Diego River Corridor from fire and pollution. Currently, there are several existing state and local codes that address fire prohibitions and liabilities due to carelessness, neglect, or intentional acts. These existing codes grant enforcement authority to local law enforcement and fire agencies to investigate and hold individuals accountable for unlawful acts. Anderson says passing an unsafe camping ordinance in the county's unincorporated areas, however, is a crucial step to protect all residents. He cites as an example January's center fire in Rancho Bernardo that burned 7 acres. San Diego's Metro Arson Strike Team reports that the center fire, which forced people in homes and those in a daycare center to evacuate, was started in a homeless encampment. Anderson says over 1,100 fires in the last year were connected to homeless encampments. A staff report on the ordinance notes that the county will continue to have a services-first approach, with a goal of connecting people with shelter, food, and, where appropriate, substance use disorder and mental health treatment. The county's outreach team coordinates services and resources, including emergency housing, to people experiencing homelessness in the unincorporated communities. The 2024 point-in-time count identified nearly 200 unsheltered homeless people in the unincorporated county area. The county's changes are enabled by the June 2024 Supreme Court decision in the City of Grants Pass versus Johnson case. That decision now allows local governments to enforce camping bans through citations or arrest, regardless of the number of shelter beds open or not. Although all supervisors voted for drafting an update to the county's unsafe camping ordinance, Supervisor Monica Montgomery Stepp says she wants to be sure shelter space is available for anybody who is displaced. The county currently operates no homeless shelters other than 2 safe parking areas for unhoused people living in vehicles, though plans are in the works to build sleeping cabins in Lemon Grove. Montgomery Stepp says, "We have a moral obligation, before we put handcuffs on somebody, to say, we have a place for you to go." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Tidwell with a Crime Beat report. 22-year-old Shane Capizio has been arrested after allegedly kidnapping a rideshare driver in East County. The female Lyft driver texted 911 and told the dispatcher that she was being held against her will by a passenger she picked up in Spring Valley, who claimed to have a gun, says Sergeant Kenneth Seal with the San Diego County Sheriff's Department. Capizio reportedly told the driver to take him to a cannabis dispensary in Lemon Grove. Deputies from the Lemon Grove Sheriff's Substation and Rancho San Diego Sheriff's Station arrived at the dispensary's parking lot, where they found a struggle taking place inside the car between Capizio and the driver, according to Sergeant Seal. Deputies quickly intervened and detained Capizio. the driver was not seriously injured. A preliminary investigation by deputies found that the suspect did not have a gun. He was arrested on charges including kidnapping, robbery, false imprisonment, and preventing a victim from calling 911. Capizia was booked into the San Diego Central Jail. Text to 911 is available throughout San Diego County, while calling is still the fastest way to reach 911. However, there are situations when texting may be the better option if you're deaf, hard of hearing, or have difficulty speaking. If you're in a situation where it's not safe to call 911 for help, or if you're having a medical emergency and cannot speak on the phone.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. The past week's storms brought rain, snow, and damage such as potholes, fallen trees, and flooded roads. The county is urging residents in San Diego County's unincorporated areas to report non-emergency storm damage through the Tell Us Now app. You can download the Tell Us Now app on both Apple and Android phones in English or Spanish. After downloading the app, just choose a category and the nature of the request. Attach a photo if available. Provide the location and your contact info, and then submit the request. When a report is submitted, the appropriate county departments will be quickly notified. If the complaint is not under the county's jurisdiction, the app will notify you of the correct authority to contact to fix the problem. In addition to storm-related issues, residents can also use the Tell Us Now app to report air quality complaints, such as smoke, odors, or dust, vector control issues like mosquito breeding areas, green pools, or dead birds, which can be indicators of West Nile virus, code compliance issues such as abandoned vehicles, graffiti, or illegal dumping, pricing and scale issues at businesses, including gas pumps and grocery stores, non-emergency problems at a county-operated park, and other road service requests that are not storm-related.
By a unanimous vote, El Cajon City Council voted on March 11th to adopt an ordinance prohibiting the sale of vaping or e-cigarette devices disguised as other products. According to the U.S. Health and Human Services Department, many teens are now using stealth vaping products. Some are hidden in backpacks or hoodies. Others resemble flash drives, fidget spinners, pens, smartwatches, or handheld gaming devices, making it easy for kids to use tobacco, even in schools. Many are sold as single-use devices, making them affordable and accessible to young people. Councilman Gary Kendrick, author of the measure, told the council, "I received letters from each one of our local school districts asking us to do this. In addition to tobacco," he noted, "kids are using cannabis." He added, "Students are not going to be very well educated if they're stoned out of their minds using these fake devices." The ordinance imposes a fine of $2,500 for a first offense by a local retailer. Subsequent offenses will result in fines and temporary license suspension. A fourth offense will result in permanent revocation of the retailer's tobacco license. Retailers will be entitled to due process to appeal. Kendrick observed, "The primary goal of local government is to protect citizens, and children are the ones who need the most protection." Although El Cajon City Council has been bitterly divided on some recent issues, the measure to ban vaping devices, camouflaged as other items, passed unanimously. U.S. Health and Human Services offers tips for parents and educators to help spot these clandestine devices, such as watching for hoodies and backpacks with a hose woven through the fabric, enabling the user to vape discreetly. Also, be on the lookout for disposable e-cigarettes, which can't be refilled but are inexpensive. These may resemble a colored pen or a flash drive, the most popular stealth vaping device. In 2024, over 55% of young people using e-cigarettes reported using disposable versions that didn't have to be hidden away at home, according to the National Youth Tobacco Survey. Teen vaping is a widespread problem nationally. The survey found that of high school students who use e-cigarettes, over 26% reported using them daily, and over 38% used them 20 or more times each month, fueling nicotine dependency.
The American Lung Association has developed a free educational program that schools can use as an alternative to disciplining children found with e-cigarettes to encourage vaping youths to quit. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
An autopsy has determined that actor Gene Hackman's wife, Betsy Arakawa, died of hantavirus pulmonary syndrome. The disease linked to exposure to rodents is rare, often fatal, and has been detected in 9 rodents so far this year here in San Diego County. The couple was found dead in their Bel Air home. Hackman, who was 94, died days later of heart disease and complications of Alzheimer's. Arakawa was 65. Her death shines a spotlight on hantavirus, a rare but often deadly virus spread by inhaling particles from rodent droppings. The disease is fatal about 40% of the time. Hantavirus was first identified in 1993 after a respiratory outbreak in the Four Corners region of the southwestern United States. Between 1993 and 2024, 864 cases have been reported nationwide, the Centers for Disease Control reports. Of those, 834 were hantavirus pulmonary syndrome, the most dangerous form of the disease. The other 30 were non-pulmonary hantavirus infections. Nearly all of the cases in the United States, 94%, have occurred west of the Mississippi, affecting both children and adults. Here in San Diego County, the county has been testing wild rodents for hantavirus since 2008. Mice have been found positive primarily in rural, mountain, and desert areas. Last year, 25 cases of hantavirus locally were confirmed in rodents through laboratory testing. So far this year, 9 cases have been found in deer mice, including 4 in Rancho Cuyamaca State Park, as well as in deer mice and a western harvest mouse in Escondido. Symptoms of hantavirus may appear 1 to 8 weeks after exposure to rodents or their droppings. Early symptoms may include severe muscle aches, chills and fever, headache, dizziness, difficulty breathing, coughing, nausea, vomiting, stomach pain, and in severe cases, respiratory failure. So it's important to contact your doctor right away if you have these symptoms. While there is no vaccine or treatment, medical care can help reduce the symptoms of hantavirus. Here are steps you can take to prevent exposure. Keep rodents out of homes, cabins, sheds, or other structures by sealing all entry holes the size of a dime or larger. Air out unused structures at least half an hour before you enter. Cover or store away pet food dishes, and trash cans with rodent-proof lids. Remove wood piles, trash, and old cars where rodents may nest. Store hay and firewood at least 100 feet from buildings. Cut grass, remove weeds, and trim bushes near the buildings, too. If you see signs of mice, use mouse traps and catch them. If you must clean up rodent-infested areas, wear a protective face mask as well as latex or rubber gloves. Do not stir up dust by sweeping or vacuuming rodent droppings, urine, or nesting materials. Instead, use the wet cleaning method. Make a disinfectant solution of 10 parts water and 1 part bleach, or use a commercial disinfectant. Spray the solution on rodent nests, droppings, and any dead rodents, and let the solution sit for 20 minutes. Then soak sponges in the disinfectant solution and clean up the area. Put all those infested materials, such as nesting, droppings, and dead rodents, in a sealed plastic bag, or better yet, double bag it, and throw it away. Wash and discard gloves in plastic, and then thoroughly wash your hands again. You can find more information on hantavirus at cdc.gov or at the San Diego County Health Department. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part 2 of the East County Magazine radio show.
2 federal judges have ruled that the Trump administration's mass firing of federal workers was illegal. Both judges ordered thousands of probationary fired workers rehired, at least temporarily, though the 2 rulings differ on the scope of agencies affected. Combined, the 2 rulings order that 18 agencies immediately rehire those fired, affecting a broad range of jobs from National Park Rangers to Veterans Administration workers and many more. The judges also issued scathing rebukes of the purge of agencies done by the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, and accused the administration of lying when it claimed the firings were based on performance issues, since many of the laid-off workers had extremely positive performance reviews. U.S. District Court Judge William Alsup in San Francisco called the mass terminations a sham. He stated in open court, "It is sad, a sad day, when our government would fire some good employee and say it was based on performance when they know good and well that's a lie. That should not have been done in our country," the judge said. Judge Alsup ordered the immediate rehiring of fired probationary employees in these six departments: Agriculture, Defense, Energy, Interior, Treasury, and Veterans Affairs. That lawsuit was filed by federal employees' unions. His order lasts until whenever the case's outcome is ultimately resolved in court, a process that could take years. U.S. District Judge James Bredar in New York issued a broader but more temporary order in a case filed by Democratic state attorneys general. Judge Bredar's order requires 18 federal departments to immediately rehire the fired probationary workers for at least 14 days, though he indicated he is considering a longer relief. His order requires reemployment to be offered to the fired probationary workers in these departments: Agriculture, Commerce, Defense, Education, Energy, Health and Human Services, Homeland Security, Housing and Urban Development, Interior, which includes the National Park Service, Labor, Transportation, Treasury, Veterans Affairs, the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the General Services Administration, and the Small Business Administration. However, Judge Bredar found the states failed to meet the burden of proof to show illegal firings at three other agencies, which he excluded from his ruling. Those are the Defense Department, the Office of Personnel Management, and the National Archives and Records Administration. Judge Bredar found that the mass firings failed to provide 60 days required notice and to follow other requirements of the law. He concluded, "The sheer number of employees that were terminated in a manner of days belies any argument that these terminations were due to the employee's individual performance or conduct. The government's contention to the contrary borders on the frivolous." Bredar also found arguments from the states compelling, noting that the lack of notice left states impaired in their capacities to meet their legal obligations to the citizens. Judge Alsup bristled at the Justice Department's refusal to make Acting Office of Management and Budget Director Charles Ezell available for testimony, and suggested the Trump administration's attorneys were withholding information on who directed these mass firings. The Trump administration has already filed an appeal in one case and will likely do so in both. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt issued a statement after the ruling, saying, "A single judge attempting to unconstitutionally seize the power of hiring and firing from the executive branch. If a federal district court would like executive powers, they can try and run for president themselves," she sniped. The Trump administration will immediately fight back against this absurd and unconstitutional order. In fact, the hiring and firing of federal employees is dictated by federal law, which contains numerous civil service worker protections. In addition, many legal scholars have said it is illegal for the executive branch to usurp the power of Congress, which created many of the agencies being gutted under the guise of streamlining government efficiency and saving taxpayers money in an effort led by Elon Musk. Everett Kelly, president of the American Federation of Government Employees, said he is pleased with Judge Alsup's order to immediately reinstate tens of thousands of probationary federal employees who were illegally fired from their jobs by an administration hell-bent on crippling federal agencies and their work on behalf of the American public, he says. California Attorney General Rob Bonta, who led efforts to sue the Trump administration on behalf of the states, issued this statement: "The Trump administration's callous and reckless mass firing of probationary federal employees has caused chaos and prevented these workers from providing critical services that affect the everyday lives of Americans, from offering support for veterans and farmers to protecting our cherished national parks and public lands." Bonta added, "I am pleased that the federal district court has promptly granted our request for a temporary restraining order which will block the administration's unlawful mass firing directive and reinstate affected employees. I, alongside my fellow attorneys general, will be closely monitoring to ensure that the administration follows the court's order," he said. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Congressman Daryl Issa hasn't held a town hall meeting since 2017 despite numerous requests from constituents and weekly protests outside his office. So local activists will be holding an empty chair town hall on Sunday, March 23rd, at the California Center for the Performing Arts in Escondido. The event is part of a nationwide effort encouraged by the progressive group Indivisible to hold representatives accountable during the congressional recess. The local empty chair town hall will be hosted by Dr. Allison Gill from the Mueller She Wrote podcast. RSVPs are required, and the 350-seat venue is currently fully booked, though a waiting list has been started. The event will also be live-streamed, and information on how to watch will be posted on Indivisible North County San Diego's social media. Those attending are encouraged to bring written questions on issues such as potential cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and Veterans Services. The event will feature a panel of community leaders, including a veterans advocate, school board member, city council member, and other local experts who will respond to audience questions. Pamela Albergo with Indivisible North County San Diego says, "When our elected officials refuse to engage with their constituents, democracy suffers." San Diego's four other congressional members, all Democrats, have not held live town halls in the past year, Times of San Diego recently reported. But ISA, the lone local Republican representative, has not held a town hall in the past 7 years. ISA has been a vocal supporter of the Trump administration and its controversial policies, such as mass deportations, even nominating President Donald Trump for a Nobel Peace Prize, despite Trump's antagonistic stances toward longtime U.S. allies in Europe, Ukraine, Canada, and Mexico. ISA recently introduced a bill to hold accountable those he calls rogue judges who rule against Trump. ISA has been invited to the event, but if he doesn't show up, an empty chair will represent the absent congressman. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Several hundred protesters marched to the Capitol building in Sacramento on Tuesday, calling for better funding for education. The event was part of a nationwide day of action sponsored by the American Federation of Teachers. Stephanie Luna, a student at East Los Angeles Community College, says she supports Assembly Bill 537, which would allow 2 years of free community college tuition for part-time students. Right now, the College Promise program is only open to people who take a full course load.
We know that the majority of California community college students are part-time. For the students that have to work or that have to take care of families, they're also deserving of access to a higher education the same way that full-time students are.
Speakers also called for full funding for higher education in the next state budget, currently under negotiation. And with the state and federal budgets in flux, Republicans in Congress are proposing huge cuts to Medicaid. The Trump administration is also threatening to pull federal funding from schools that use race as a factor in policy or programming. Sociology professor James McKeever with Pierce College in Los Angeles says courses that touch on diversity, equity, and inclusion are important to a well-rounded education.
We're really trying to ensure that we're teaching an accurate, diverse history. Too often our history books have left out the accomplishments of women, of people of color, and the queer people. And we wanted to make sure that those people get remembered and recognized.
Speakers at the march also called on lawmakers to fend off any tuition increases and to prioritize fair compensation and equitable working conditions for campus employees. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with a local business report. Kristen Dare, who led the Santee Chamber of Commerce as CEO for the past 6 years, has resigned from the position to take a new job at Waste Management Corporation. In an email sent to chamber members on March 3rd, Chamber Chair Susie Parks said she is grateful for Dare's decade of experience at the Business Association. Parks says the chamber is retaining Dare in a consulting capacity as the organization goes through a transition and searches for a new chief executive. Dare will assist in the group's signature spring events. The Santee Chamber, which celebrates its 70th anniversary this year, has about 250 members and an annual budget of about $350,000. The organization holds networking events to support local businesses as well as annual community events.
A new city vibe is expected to come to the more than 100-year-old city of El Cajon. Earlier this month, the Downtown El Cajon Business Partners, a nonprofit dedicated to promoting a safe and prosperous downtown El Cajon, announced that it had hired New City America to lead a renewal effort in the area. The group that helped revitalize Little Italy is being tapped to make downtown El Cajon a vibrant community hub. The final contract, set in an original request for bid for $150,000 annually, has not been signed yet, said Downtown El Cajon Business Partners board member and treasurer Kathy Zeman. New City America is a nationally recognized urban revitalization firm that, among other things, helped transform the Little Italy area of San Diego into a vibrant and popular destination. It did similar work in Chula Vista's historic 3rd Avenue district, launching new public events and improvements. Downtown El Cajon Business Partners is a group funded through a property-based improvement district authority authorized by the City of El Cajon in 2015 to support downtown improvements via assessments made on property owners. The nonprofit is made up of local businesses and other stakeholders who want to improve the downtown area. It manages the PVID funds for about 300 parcels and coordinates events such as concerts and car shows. Once the contract is finalized in the coming weeks, New City America President Marco Limandri will serve as executive director of the Downtown El Cajon Business Partners. The collaboration is expected to reinvigorate the downtown area by attracting new businesses, expanding nightlife opportunities, and bringing solutions to those who are experiencing homelessness. Chris Berg, board member of Downtown El Cajon Business Partners and marketing manager for the City of El Cajon, believes the partnership with New City America will be transformative for the city. He says, "Our business community has long needed a dedicated, experienced leader to unite property owners, merchants, and City Hall around a common vision." In the coming months, Limandri and the Downtown Business Partners are expected to engage local merchants and residents to develop an action plan for downtown, including building on the popular Cajon Classic Cruise, which will rev up starting in May. The Cajon Classic Cruise has been a tradition along Main Street since 2001 and has become one of Southern California's largest weekly car shows. Every week's three-hour show is focused on different types of vehicles, from lowriders, trucks, and convertibles, to Volkswagens, to Mustangs, and British-focused cars. But the event has run into some scrutiny recently. Some business owners in the downtown area have expressed concern to the city that those showing their vehicles were parking in spots that customers needed long before the shows would start at 5 p.m., and it was impacting their businesses. Zeman says, "We're trying to put some plans in place so that the car show people don't park or stage too early." Earlier this month, the City of El Cajon held a workshop that addressed that, as well as other complaints and concerns. The workshop stemmed from a city staff report and related discussions held on last October on the future of the PVID, including concerns over revenues from assessments, consideration or not renewing the PVID, and expanding the PVID boundaries. The October discussion also included discussions about considering another venue in the city for the car show, such as Parkway Plaza, and questions over management of the car show. A city staff report said that the car show costs between $72,000 and around $80,000 of the PBID's budget. A study has found that based on sales tax data, the car shows had no impact on downtown businesses' sales. Zeman said the partners are looking for ways to make the event profitable. Ultimately, a decision was made to keep the car show downtown this year, though it will be revving up starting in May for a shorter season than in the past. New events are planned for the future, including bringing back a farmers market as part of the broader Market Nights weekly event that could also include nightlife, live music, food trucks, plus wine and a beer garden, aimed at providing broad participation from the community and beyond. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ Radio, this is Henry Migala.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Henry Migala with the Green Scene Report. When Urban Timber partners Jessica Van Arsdale and Dan Herbst learned that they had just a few months to move their well-established tree salvage business, the couple had to scramble to find a place to move hundreds of tons of logs that they had saved from the landfill. The company that saves trees from urban displacement was itself facing displacement from its Chula Vista location. Fortunately, after a few weeks of stress and uncertainty, Urban Timber found a new location in rural East County. Ben Arsdale and Herps found a 13-acre piece of land listed for sale in Kempo, and they found real estate agent Carol Schneider. She championed the purchase, knowing of Urban Timber's plans for the property were to bring new business and new energy to the town. The vision is to build community in Kempo with resources, materials, and tools on site for artists and woodworkers to design and build projects using salvaged wood from around San Diego County. Schneider, the realtor, says she's amazed at the progress that the couple has made toward turning the property into a showcase. She calls Herbst a true craftsman. In its previous location, Urban Timber transformed a blighted piece of land on Bay Boulevard in Chula Vista into a hub for an artistic and sustainable-minded community where trees came to be upcycled and people came to turn imagination into reality. Through partnerships with the city, word of mouth, and a network of tree lovers, the business amassed a beautiful collection of logs that would have otherwise gone to the wood chipper, but instead were turned into custom furniture, shelving, siding, benches, sculptures, and even a one-of-a-kind Fender guitar named the Timbermaster. Van Arsdale says, "We are so thankful to be here in Kempo. It feels like our future came and got us and took us here to a place we can stay and call home and retire someday. But retirement is way off for the couple who have big plans for their new home. Now that all the wood has been transported from Chula Vista to Kempo, a feat that took 2 weeks, 5 38-foot dump trucks, and several 48-foot flatbeds, Herp says they will put down roots and branch out. Van Arsdale hopes to eventually have demonstrations, tours, info sessions, workshops, and art classes hosting landscape architects, designers, and builders. Soon, she says, we'll create a living catalog of our landscape design materials. We want to put all this material and space to use. The recycled lumber site currently has redwood from Balboa Park, bunya from UCSD, wood from eucalyptus trees that had been cut down due to age or development, and much more. Herbst is also looking forward to the opportunity to use wood from fallen oaks, which he couldn't use while in the city since oak can't be transported due to the risk of spreading oak borer beetles. He had heard of oak removals around the county but had not been able to salvage them. Now he can collect fallen oaks and dry them in his kiln to kill the bugs before using the wood. For now, clients can visit Urban Timber by invitation, but eventually the wood catalog will be organized in a more shop-ready format or possibly showcased locally in partnership with Kempo businesses so customers can see what's available. With kilns and mills on site, logs can be dried, cut, and fashioned for various purposes. Lumber and cut pieces are also still for sale at Urban Timber's separate wood shop location on Industrial Boulevard in Chula Vista, where the business will continue to maintain a presence as it transitions to its new home in Kempo. Van Arsdale is especially excited about forging partnerships with local businesses and organizations. Liberty Rising Healing Sanctuary of Boulevard came to the property to set up the right vibe for moving in, and Rose Acre Farms was also on the welcoming committee. Urban Timber's owners have met their neighbor, who keeps a donkey and rides his horse to visit neighbors, and they've befriended staff at East County Lumber and Feed. Herbst concludes, "We want to do this in a considerate way. We're not coming here with deep pockets and a splashy mansion. We want to stay in rhythm with nature." As Urban Timber gets its footing in Kempo, Van Arsdale and Herbst see the business as an integral part of the town's economy. "But I think we'll need a new name," Van Arsdale muses. "Perhaps not so Urban Timber." This is Henry Migala with a Green Scene Report for East County Magazine and KNSJ Radio.
Fresh water available for human use only makes up about 1% of the water on Earth, and 86% of it goes to irrigated farms. So experts say in a time of water scarcity, agriculture is going to have to cut back. The agricultural industry is the largest user of fresh water, making up nearly 70% of global withdrawals from rivers, lakes, and aquifers. Brian Richter with the nonprofit Sustainable Waters says the majority of water on irrigated farms goes to raise crops used for cattle feed.
So that includes corn silage and sorghum silage, but the dominant crops that are being irrigated in the western United States are alfalfa and grass hay.
Richter adds there's no effective control over the total volume of water that gets used, so rivers are drying up, greatly affecting wildlife. And aquifers are being depleted, causing the ground to sink in some places. Richter predicts that about 20% of existing farmland in the water-stressed western U.S. will need to be retired. So policymakers, water managers, and farmers will have to make hard choices.
You set a cap on the total amount of water that can be consumed from each water source. Another important strategy is shifting from water-intensive crops to crops that don't require as much water. We refer to that as crop shifting.
Another way to ease pressure on global water resources would be to encourage people to eat less beef. This story was produced with original reporting by Gabriella Sotelo for Sentient. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
We'll end our show today with some breaking national news stories from Public News Service.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We are absolutely outraged that he has been abducted from his home for speaking up for Palestinian liberation. As Jews, we understand what it means to experience fascism.
Jay Saber with Jewish Voice for Peace New York City says Columbia University activist Mahmoud Khalil has the right to First Amendment protections. 300 members of the group swarmed Trump Tower Thursday and were forcibly removed by police. Khalil is a Palestinian and a permanent U.S. resident married to an American citizen. He was arrested and taken to immigrant detention, but not charged with a crime. President Donald Trump's administration accuses him of anti-Semitic activity and supporting terrorism. Courts have repeatedly ruled that green card holders have the same free speech rights as natural-born citizens. The Trump administration is asking the Supreme Court to let it end birthright citizenship. Lower courts ruled the move unconstitutional, citing clear language in the 14th Amendment. Trump's special envoy of the Middle East, Steve Witkoff, has delivered a new proposal for building on the tenuous Gaza ceasefire, but he says Israel is not satisfied with what it's seeing from Hamas.
A starter is Hamas demilitarizing, not rearming, leaving all their arms on the ground, and leaving Gaza. That's the start.
In an overnight shift, the Senate's Democratic leader seems to be clearing the way for a spending stopgap to keep the government open. Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says a shutdown would only empower Trump and Elon Musk, so enough Democrats will support 6 months of funding. Conservationists are suing Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency over mask firing of probationary federal workers and say the land agencies are not staffing up enough for fire season. Sierra Club's Gloria Smith says the firings are also having a devastating impact on visitor safety, wildlife protection, and proper maintenance of public lands in states like Arizona.
There's a lot of work that goes into making a park presentable and safe for the high season when millions and millions of people visit.
Meanwhile, a federal judge has ruled that six agencies must reinstate employees fired as part of Trump's federal workforce reduction plan, calling the terminations a sham and rejecting claims that the Office of Personnel Management was only issuing guidance to the agencies. In Ohio, Republican Governor Mike DeWine's administration is investing $30 million in regional child wellness campuses to support children with acute trauma. Angela Saucer with the Public Children's Services Association of Ohio praises the move.
We appreciate the governor's response to the ongoing crisis that leaves too many children without the services and appropriate placements necessary to address their complex needs.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.